This morning, want to give out a gold star to Miss Jeanette, who was the only one in Howard's class who answered the question correctly. Why was Barnabas singled out and why? Because he lived the life. He was living this faith. It wasn't just a doctrine that he assented to intellectually. It was something that changed the way that he walked. Remember last week, and I'm not implying that Jeanette is the only one that listens to the sermon, but she was the only one who spoke up this morning in Howard's class. But a couple of weeks ago, we talked about Barnabas and this biography as a means of grace and the importance of looking back and seeing all of those who have gone before us. And we talked about him being a person of great faith. And in Acts 11, 19 through 26, you know, there is the Barnabas being sent to Antioch. The church is growing. The church in Jerusalem knows they need support, so they send Barnabas. Because he's empathetic to outsiders. He understands, he remembers the awe of being included by God in his family. He knows, he remembers what that's like to be brought into this relationship. So he's empathetic to those who are on the outside. He goes, he gets Paul, he brings Paul. Even though nobody wants to hear from Paul, this murderous Christian killer, they don't believe his transformation. So he's empathetic to outsiders. He submits to God's will through the church. Remember we talked about, you know, can the church tell you anything to do? The men in Jerusalem tell Barnabas, we want you to go. What does Barnabas do? Packs up and goes. No question, no debate, no, hey, you know, what about this guy? I've got to sell a field. I've got to, you know, my business is doing this. No. When God's will comes calling through the ordination of the church, Barnabas answers that call. And a person of great faith is seeing the grace of God in this imperfect church. He shows up, and more than one occasion it says that his heart was glad for what he found there. Then we go on last week to look at that great faith makes great people. It makes others great. It is a great leader maker in the kingdom. And in Acts 9, 18 through 31, we talked about the risk-taking factors of Barnabas' faith, that he takes a risk. He sticks his neck out for other people. He has this good eye for the embers of grace that are just smoldering in the lives of others. And he has a glad heart to fan into flames those things. He doesn't want to quench them with cold, wet criticism. He wants to build them up, the sun of encouragement. And he's humble and self-effacing. Barnabas, who was a big deal in the church, who was a big deal in this community, goes and he pours himself into Paul. And slowly but surely, you see Barnabas taking a back seat to the ministry, to the work of Paul, to the person who Paul would become, one of the greatest theologians, one of the greatest missionaries in the history of the church. We know that, you know, Barnabas was this person willing to just take a step back on his own. I mean, I believe it's Acts chapter 14, when they go and the people there, they think that they're gods. And they say, who are these gods who have descended? And they call Barnabas by the name of a god, and they call Paul by the name of a god. You know who they call Barnabas? They call him Zeus. And you know who they call Paul? They call him Apollos. Now, Zeus is the king, the father of the gods. He's the main god in their culture. And so Barnabas, we get this picture of him of being this, you know, this older, more mature, you know, calmer, Zeus-like character. His Roman name is Jupiter. And Paul is Apollos. His Roman name is Mercury. You know, the winged feet, fast, you know, out there guy. Well, Barnabas was the Zeus. Paul was the Apollos. Somehow that relationship, that those characteristics changed over their ministry. Barnabas was willing to say, hey, I'm not trying to be the leader of anything. I'm just trying to make God's kingdom great. And if that's by building this one up so that he can go and use what he's got for the Lord, then that's what's important to me. And this week, we're going to quickly go through Well, that got messed up. Okay. Pay no attention to those words down below. That's not for you right now. We're going to talk about this as biography, as a means for grace, the weakness of a great man, this great faith that he had, and this leader-making faith. But it comes with it weaknesses. And in Acts chapter 15, 36 through 41, there we're going to read our text. Well, I had it, and then I lost it. Okay, Acts chapter 15, 36 through 41. This is going to kind of set the scene for what's going on and kind of where we go from here. Sometime later, Paul said to Barnabas, "Let us go back and visit the brothers in all the towns where we preach the word of the Lord, and we're going to see how they're doing." Barnabas wanted to take John, also called Mark, with them. But Paul did not think it was wise to take him because he deserted them in Pamphylia and had not continued with them in the work. They had such a sharp disagreement that they parted company. Barnabas took Mark and sailed for Cyprus, but Paul chose Silas and left. Commended by the brothers to the grace of the Lord, he went through Syria and Cilicia, strengthening the churches. What we see here is there is a significant disagreement between Paul and Barnabas. And it's such a significant disagreement that they split company. You know, the guy who went and got Paul, who took him, who built him up, and now they're at such odds that they can't even go in the same direction. Now, Luke, who writes the book of Acts, he doesn't really take any sides. He doesn't, you know, give any pains to let us know, you know, who's right or who's wrong. He does give us one insight in that those who were there, they commended Paul and Silas and the grace of God. They kind of sent them on their way with a blessing, and Barnabas and Mark, they really didn't say a whole lot about. But Luke doesn't say who's right, who's wrong, whatever. He just gives us the facts that there was such a disagreement, such a significant disagreement, that they went their separate ways. One of the things that we learn from this in the very beginning is that Satan is going to take his shots at you. One of the realities of being a man or a woman of God, a person of faith, a leader maker in the church, is that those who dare to walk the horizon of leadership make great targets silhouetted against the setting sun. Now, I didn't write that. I can't remember where I got that quote, but that I'm quoting somebody smarter than me. But it's the truth. When you take a stand, when you do anything in the eye of people around you, when you try to do great things or even good things, Satan sees that. And it puts you at great risk. Barnabas was no different. Satan will take his shots at you. Paul and Barnabas, great men, great leaders. They're not immune to this. One of those great shots that Satan took, I mentioned it earlier in Acts chapter 14, when the people there are saying, "Oh, look, these gods have descended." And they quickly said, no, we are men just like you. See, that's Satan trying to, as they are silhouetted against the setting sun, Satan trying to take his shots. Because it would be real easy for them to feel like, oh yeah, you know, maybe we are something special. But they don't do that. And what we learn from this is that, the strength of Barnabas becomes this weakness. You see, Barnabas wants to give Mark another chance. In Acts 15 and 36, Barnabas wants to say, he goes to Paul and says, "Look, let's take Mark." Well, Mark, something had happened. Now, the little backstory on this Mark's mom, Mary, whose house they were meeting, you know, that's where they were meeting when Peter was released from prison and all that. You know, there's some history with these people. He goes with them. Something happens and he turns back. It really annoys Paul. And I don't know how much Barnabas is okay with it, but they come to this point and a few years later, Barnabas is saying, "Well, let's take Mark with us." And Paul's like, no, we're not doing that. Remember, Barnabas is this son of encouragement. He's empathetic to people. He sees the good even in the fallen. So one of the things that he wants to do is give Mark another chance. You know, Barnabas's patience with others leads him to fall in line with, let's let's give this guy another chance. Paul says, no, we're not going to do that. Another place that Barnabas' patience with others leads him to fall in line with someone else's is with Peter when he goes back to Jerusalem and they have this whole issue with Gentile circumcision. You'll read about that all throughout Galatians. Barnabas gets that wrong with Peter, but he's trying to encourage. He's just trying to facilitate these relationships and he's trying to give the benefit of the doubt. In one case, when it's Mark, he's just trying to forgive a guy and saying, let's just take him with us on this trip. In another case, with Peter, Barnabas gets it wrong. The reality of great leaders is that great saints go astray. It's easy for us just to dwell on the good, just to see all of the positive, all of the greatness. And you know what happens when we do that? When we dwell on the good things and the triumphs of those who have gone before us in Christian biography. When we see just the good, we don't relate to that, do we? Because we fall down. We get it wrong. But here we see a great person of the Lord, a great pillar of the early church. Great saints can go astray. We learn as much from our weaknesses as we do our strengths. In 2 Corinthians 12, 8 through 10. We're told, look, you know, all of us are sinners. Paul goes on to, you know, he makes great pains of saying, I am a chief of sinners. The reality is that as we look back, as we use Christian biography as a means for grace, don't forget that great people, saints, can still go astray. In our life, don't we find that out? We try to do what God wants us to do. We try to lift others up. And sometimes we fall. So did Barnabas. It wasn't the end of the world. A great reality. I don't know. Sometimes the entrances get all messed up when they transfer from my computer to here. So we're just gonna get it all up there at one time. The fact of the matter is, when great saints go astray, it's that there's a reality of judgment calls. You see, the Bible gives us principles that we have to apply to situations, and we won't agree on everything. Paul and Barnabas didn't get any kind of instruction from the Lord that we know of that, okay, when someone deserts you, when someone leaves the mission, when someone leaves you high and dry, after 18 months, it's okay to take them back. Look at the words that are used in Acts chapter 15. Paul says, let's go back, let's go visit. Barnabas wanted to take John, also Mark, with them. But Paul did not think it was wise. Just want to let that sink in for a second. As we try to be this community that Lance and Al have talked about this morning, who's right? I mean, who's right here? The fact of the matter is there are judgment calls that we have to make, and the wording there is that Paul was just like, you know what, I don't think that's a good idea. Barnabas, the son of encouragement, he's trying to give Mark the benefit of the doubt. He's saying, look, let's take him, let's give him another chance. Paul says, I'm not willing to do that. And Luke doesn't say, and Paul was strongly rebuked by the Lord for his decision. There's judgment calls. There are times when we have to take the principles of God and apply them to situations where we don't have the yes or no answer. Some things God says, do this and don't do that. Don't commit adultery. Don't commit murder. But other times, the multitude of times, the majority of times, all we have is a principle that we apply to a situation in our life, in the lives of others. And we have to trust that the intentions are to bring glory to God and not ourselves. But there is a reality of judgment calls. And there is this vulnerability to sons of encouragement. That's what Barnabas falls into when we try to be these encouraging people that give him the benefit of the doubt. There's a vulnerability to that. His inclination is to stand up for everyone. See, what Barnabas had is a heart for relationships. And guess what? Relationships are important. Paul didn't have this problem. You know what Paul had? Paul had a strict, strong grasp, desire, well, however you want to describe it, for the truth of the gospel. And a lot of times, Katie barred the door. I mean, it was going to be, this is the truth, and I don't care how it sounds. And that's important. So what's right? What's the... Or, you know, sometimes you have to coddle people and caress them and forgive them and bring them along? Or do you stand steadfast? This is the truth and this is the gospel and this is what's right. Because you have two ends of the spectrum in Paul and Barnabas. And they're at odds. And both of them have a leg to stand on. You see, this the strength of a son of encouragement can quickly become a weakness. It does when Barnabas is standing up for Peter, because he understands the struggle that the Jewish Christians in Jerusalem have with the Gentiles entering into and being brought into the church. Well, here's all of this history and all this tradition and all of this stuff, this covenant given to us by God, and you mean it just means nothing? And Peter gets that. Paul, none of that mattered to Paul. But see, here's Barnabas caught in the middle. He empathizes with these people struggling over here. I mean, they're struggling with their tradition. They're struggling with their, with the covenant, with the promise of Abraham. They're struggling with all of this. And Paul's over here, this apostle to these Gentiles, these, and he's saying, you know, none of that matters. And they're right. Paul's right. None of it matters. Circumcision doesn't matter. Temple sacrifice doesn't, temple worship doesn't matter. But Barnabas is right, because people matter in their hearts, and where they are and relationships with them are important. See, in Galatians chapter 1, Paul is hyper-focused on truth. What leads to Galatians 1 is that Barnabas is hyper-focused on relationships. The beautiful thing is that there's a need for diversity of strengths. See, God has chosen to build a beautiful kingdom on the diversity of people. Because the fact is that Barnabas is right to a degree. And Paul is right to another degree. Relationships are important. Empathizing with people are important. Truth is also important. But if you don't have a relationship with someone, if they don't see you as empathizing with where they are, where they've been, what they're struggling with, they'll never listen to your truth. They'll never care about your truth. They'll just turn off your truth like you turned off their issues. God uses this beautiful diversity. He uses this diversity of strength. He uses the Barnabases, the sons of encouragement, the relationships, I love you, I understand where you're coming from. And He uses the Pauls and all of the people in between. It brings us to one of the other issues that there is a foolishness of resting on our past. You see, past experiences and past usefulness does not guarantee future obedience. In Acts 11:24, we're told that Barnabas is a good man, full of faith in the Holy Spirit. In Galatians chapter 2, we see that, he's kind of gone a little bit too far in the encouragement direction. A little bit too far away from, yes, I know where you're coming from, but there is this truth of the gospel. So just because we've been a son of encouragement and we know that that is who we are, doesn't mean that that's going to guarantee future obedience. And we always, always have to be on our guard, always have to be concerned with and first and foremost in our mind, glory of God and the fulfillment of His kingdom. And the last thing that we see as we wrap up this usefulness of the Christian biography and seeing how those who have lived that faith is that in all of them, no matter what, no matter whether the saints have have stumbled, whether they, you know, they're at disagreement, whether they're at odds, whether they're in agreement at all, is that none of them ever lose this firm confidence and hope in God's triumph. Turn over to 1 Corinthians. I want us to read this. We have a few minutes left, and I want you to see the beautiful words that are used here. 1 Corinthians chapter 9. Well, this isn't necessarily the beautiful part. 2 Timothy is, but we'll get to that. In 1 Corinthians, we're going to turn to two different places, but they're close. 1 Corinthians chapter 9, verse 6. It says, "Or is it only I and Barnabas who must work for a living?" Now, the backstory to that is Paul is saying, hey, aren't we entitled to a little support for the work of the Lord? He's saying, you know, it's okay to pay us to be preachers and missionaries and all that. He says, you know, other people are getting paid, are getting supported by the church for their work, but maybe it's only I and Barnabas. So Paul, you see, is kind of, at this point, back on Barnabas' side. Now look at 2 Timothy. 2 Timothy 4 and 11. Not 1 Timothy. I make that mistake a lot. Does anybody else do that? I start reading something like, that doesn't make any sense. Oh, wait. It's a whole other letter. 2 Timothy 4 and 11. Paul is writing this to Timothy. "Do your best to come to me quickly. For Demas, because he loved this world, has deserted me and has gone to Thessalonica. Crescens has gone to Galatia and Titus to Dalmatia. Only Luke is with me." And then I love this. After this great rift, after this issue that they had, that they separated ways, they couldn't even work together for them for that moment. Then when Paul is kind of at a low point, he says, "Get Mark. Bring him with you, because he's helpful to me in ministry." Neither one of these people quit ministry. I mean, it wasn't so much they had a firm grasp on what they believed. It wasn't so much that they had a firm grasp on the confidence of the stance that they took, that I did the right thing. When push came to shove, I stood up for what I believed. That wasn't it at all. They had a firm confidence in the hope in God's triumph. Look, God's going to work all of this out. And in the end, these relationships, these ministers, these men and women of the faith, these fellow soldiers, they knew. We might disagree. We might have fallouts. We might go our separate ways. We might try to bring one back and no, we're not going there. Not again. But in the end, we're all we've got on this earth. We're all we've got. Disagreements be gone. Issues be damned. God's going to triumph. God triumphs, not us. I'm a son of encouragement. I want relationships more than anything. I've got brothers and sisters who are, man, but the truth of the gospel is the truth of the gospel. And nothing is going to separate us. Nothing. Because like I tell my kids, whenever they get after each other, I always settle it all down and have them say, look around this room when it's just us in our home. So look around this room. These are your people. At the end of the day, these are the ones who are going to be there for you. These are the ones who are going to fight for you. These are the ones who are going to be where you need them to be, when you need them to be that. I say it to us, as we build this church, look around this room. These are your people. Sons and daughters of encouragement. Sons and daughters of dogmatic truth. These are your people. God will triumph, not us. And we'll have rifts. We'll have separations. But in the end, get Mark and bring him here. Bring him here. What did Mark teach Paul throughout his ministry? What did Barnabas teach Paul? What did Paul teach them? I don't know, but it was so beautiful that in his at this point in his old age, get him here. I need to see him. At one point in his life, get away from me. You're of no use to me. Now he's making sure a trusted, loyal, beloved person is bringing that same guy to him. And get here quickly. He says, get to me before winter, because after that, you'll have to wait a whole another 9 months before you can get here, and I can't wait that long. Do we have a firm confidence in the triumph and our hope in the triumph of God? The life of Barnabas is fascinating to me because it has what I have in my life. It has ups and it has downs. It has triumphs and it has tragedies. It has times where I really feel like I'm hitting on all cylinders for God, and then it has times when I look back and I think, what was I thinking? But you know what else it has? It has the people of God. Barnabas' life has the people of God around him. And isn't that what we need? This morning, do you have the people of God around you? Do you have that confidence in the triumph, hope in the triumph of God? Even in the ups when the saints are stumbling, even in the ups when they're triumphing, even the downs when the saints are stumbling, you know, the times when our strengths become weaknesses, in the end, this is who we have. And understand, God uses our diversity. He uses our different strengths to further His kingdom, to keep us all going in the right direction. This morning, surround yourself with God's people. For some, it might be confessing Christ as the Lord and Savior of your life and going into the watery grave of baptism and coming out as this new, cleansed, perfect, righteous person with a new family, a new community of believers to strengthen you, to encourage you. Some, it might be just coming back and saying, you know, I had a disagreement. I had a falling out, and I allowed that to separate me, but I'm back and I'm ready to serve. Maybe it's somebody that says, you know what, I had a disagreement and I ran somebody off. I need to go get them, call them and say, bring them back to me to be reunited to the glory of God. Whatever your need is this morning. I'm going to be up front. We're going to sing a song of invitation. It's a time traditionally that if you have any needs or want any prayers, that you can come and meet me up front. And we will do that before the Lord as together we stand and as we sing.